that have been around for a long time had to do with spectrum readings of the wavelengths of hydrogen. These produced patterns showing that hydrogen atoms emitted energy at certain wavelengths but not others. It was rather as if someone under surveillance kept turning up at particular locations but was never observed traveling between them. No one could understand why this should be. It was while puzzling over this problem that Bohr was struck by a solution and dashed off his famous paper called On the Constitutions of Atoms and Molecules. The paper explained how electrons could keep from falling into the nucleus by suggesting that they could occupy only certain well-defined orbits. According to the new theory, an electron moving between orbits would disappear from one and reappear instantaneously in another without visiting the space between. This idea, the famous quantum leap, is of course utterly strange. But it was too good not to be true. It not only kept electrons from spiraling catastrophically into the nucleus, it also explained hydrogen's bewildering wavelengths. The electrons only appeared in certain orbits because they only existed in certain orbits. It was a dazzling insight, and it won Bohr the 1922 Nobel Prize in Physics, the year after Einstein received his. Meanwhile, the tireless Rutherford, now back at Cambridge as J.J. Thomson's successor as head of the Cavendish Laboratory, came up with a model that explained why the nuclei didn't blow up. He saw that they must be offset by some type of neutralizing particles, which he called neutrons. The idea was simple and appealing, but not easy to prove. Rutherford's associate, James Chadwick, devoted 11 intense years to hunting for neutrons before finally succeeding in 1932. He, too, was awarded with a Nobel Prize in Physics in 1935. As Morse and his colleagues point out in their history of the subject, the delay in discovery was probably a very good thing, as mastery of the neutron was essential to the development of the atomic bomb. Because neutrons have no charge, they aren't repelled by the electrical fields at the heart of an atom, and thus could be fired like tiny torpedoes into an atomic nucleus, setting off the destructive process known as fission. Had the neutron been isolated in the 1920s, they note, it is very likely the atomic bomb would have been developed first in Europe, undoubtedly by the Germans. As it was, the Europeans had their hands full trying to understand the strange behavior of the electron. The principal problem they faced was that the electron sometimes behaved like a particle and sometimes like a wave. This impossible duality drove physicists nearly mad. For the next decade, all across Europe, they furiously thought and scribbled and offered competing hypotheses. In France, Prince Louis-Victor de Broglie, the scion of a ducal family, found that certain anomalies in the behavior of electrons disappeared when one regarded them as waves. The observation excited the attention of the Austrian Erwin Schrödinger, who made some deft refinements and devised a handy system called wave mechanics. At almost the same time, the German physicist Werner Heisenberg came up with a competing theory called matrix mechanics. This was so mathematically complex that hardly anyone really understood it, including Heisenberg himself. "I do not even know what a matrix is," Heisenberg despaired to a friend at one point. But it did seem to solve certain problems that Schrödinger's waves failed to explain. The upshot is that physics had two theories, based on conflicting premises, that produced the same results. It was an impossible situation. Finally, in 1926, Heisenberg came up with a celebrated compromise, producing a new discipline that came to be known as quantum mechanics. At the heart of it was Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, which states that the electron is a particle, but a particle that can be described in terms of waves. The uncertainty around which the theory is built is that we can know the path an electron takes as it moves through a space, or we can know where it is at a given instant, but we cannot know both. Any attempt to measure one will unavoidably disturb the other. This isn't a matter of simply needing more precise instruments. It is an immutable property of the universe. There is a little uncertainty about the use of the word uncertainty in regard to Heisenberg's principle. Michael Frayn, in an afterword to his play Copenhagen, notes that several words in German, Unsicherheit, Unschärfe, Unbestimmtheit, have been used by various translators, but that none quite equates to the English uncertainty. Frayn suggests that indeterminacy would be a better word for the principle, and indeterminability would be better still. What this means in practice is that you can never predict where an electron will be at any given moment. You can only list its probability of being there. In a sense, as Dennis Overby has put it, an electron doesn't exist until it is observed. Or, put slightly differently, until it is observed, an electron must be regarded as being at once everywhere and nowhere. If this seems confusing, you may take some comfort in knowing that it was confusing to physicists, too. Overby notes, Bohr once commented that a person who wasn't outraged on first hearing about quantum theory didn't understand what had been said. Heisenberg, when asked how one could envision an atom, replied, Don't try. So the atom turned out to be quite unlike the image that most people had created. The electron doesn't fly around the nucleus like a planet around its sun, but instead takes on the more amorphous aspect of a cloud. The shell of an atom isn't some hard, shiny casing, as illustrations sometimes encourage us to suppose, but simply the outermost of these fuzzy electron clouds. Well, the cloud itself is essentially just a zone of statistical probability marking the area beyond which the electron only very seldom strays. Thus, an atom, if you could see it, would look more like a very fuzzy tennis ball than a hard-edged metallic sphere. But not much like either, or indeed like anything you've ever seen. We are, after all, dealing here with a world very different from the one we see around us. It seemed as if there was no end of strangeness. For the first time, as James Treffel has put it, scientists had encountered an area of the universe that our brains just aren't wired to understand. Or as Feynman expressed it, things on a small scale behave nothing like things on a large scale. As physicists delved deeper, they realized they had found a world where not only could electrons jump from one orbit to another without traveling across any